You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Man there trying to stop Drogba from getting himself into further trouble.
It's a fucking disgrace.
That's not a bad ball for Pelé on the right side. It's Carlos Alberto. And what a great goal that was! Carlos Alberto!
Maradona just walked away from Huddle then. Maldano, smoked and
Argentina the lead, the England players protesting to the referee.
Halve finale komen. Ik heb opeens zo'n gevoel dat we in de halve finale gaan komen. Met het balbezit voor Frank de Boer. Frank de Boer speelt de bal heel goed naar Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp! Dennis Bergkamp neemt de bal aan! Dennis Bergkamp!
Dennis Bergkamp! Dennis Bergkamp!
So welcome back to the podcast. I'm delighted to be joined again by former guest Andrew of Zorya Londonsk. We're going to do a bit of a preview of Ukraine-England. Andrew, how are you doing? How excited are you?
Thanks very much for having me on again. But very excited, but slightly drained after the win against Sweden, to be honest. It took a lot out of not only the fans watching, the media, and hopefully not out of the players too much ahead of the big one.
Talk to me about it, because you were obviously there in Glasgow and watching on TV. Hampden does, I don't know what the restrictions were, how many people were allowed in, but it did look quite empty, but you could still hear like the Ukrainian fans making a lot of noise.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think apparently roughly around 11 to 12,000 fans in a 50,000 capacity stadium. And I'm not sure if all of those tickets were bought up. I think that's just like the max that's allowed or something like that. It's quite a cavernous stadium sort of thing.
And it's so open. It's like a big bowl thing.
Exactly. And then it's quite far from the pitch at the goal ends as well, because it doesn't look like there's a running track, but it's as if there was one. Luckily the Ukraine fans were in their section. There were slightly more Ukraine fans than travelling Swedish fans. So they were able to make enough noise, keep the team going, and luckily it helped them get over the line, I think.
Mm-hmm. And what has been like the experience following the Ukraine team this tournament? Because I think when we spoke to you beforehand, you were quite optimistic. And then I think maybe after the Dutch game with the narrow defeat, it looked quite good. And then I think after the Austria game, I think everything I saw was like Ukraine had kind of blown their chance and they were going home.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a roller coaster of emotions, to be honest. The Netherlands game was really, you know, a real fun watch, despite the result. People were still quite optimistic that Ukraine got back into it, maybe didn't get the win, but that was down to a few individual mistakes rather than anything sort of game management-wise. The North Macedonia game, which Ukraine won their first win since 2012, was a lot more positive. A super first half, and then it sort of all fell apart slightly in the second half, where everyone got a bit nervous, and you know, Ukraine were lucky to not draw that after a few chances from North Macedonia towards the end. And then, yeah, the Austria game, no one's really sure what happened. It was as if they set out to play for the draw, sort of thing. And it obviously backfired when Austria went ahead early on. And there was just like no plan or tactics. It just didn't look like anything. And everyone looked really like flagging and out of energy. And that's the main thing that Andriy Shevchenko said post-match, said that we didn't play well, I admit that, but we were just very tired and literally we just couldn't do it because due to the fact that we had to play three games in a row. Mm-hmm. So in such a short space of time. But there was a lot of criticism of that, really, because, you know, at the end of the day, they're pro footballers. Okay, they might not have the experience of playing such high-level matches one after the other. But Shevchenko called the team training camp 2 weeks before any other team at the Euros.
Yeah.
So, you know, and none of them really had an extensive summer holiday or break at all, really. They had about 4 days with their family and that was it. So, you know, a lot of people were saying, well, what about that? Has that not had an impact? Luckily, there was an 8-day break between the Austria match and the Sweden game. And I think Ukraine had like 3 days extra preparation than Sweden. And, you know, as we got into those final stages where everyone could hardly carry on the pitch, Ukraine had just about enough energy to get the winner, luckily. And I mean, complete euphoria in Hamden.
But what after the Austria game, I remember reading about Zinchenko was quite critical of his own performance and also the team's. Was there, do you think there was maybe a bit of a reckoning kind of once they realized actually they were going to go through and have a chance that they're not going to repeat that performance against Sweden?
Absolutely. So after the Austria loss, apparently, this is what Zinchenko and Malinovsky said in the few days after the game, that they all went back to the hotel, had like a massive like huddled discussion and got everything off their chest as in what was negative about the performance, what's going on. Basically, probably like kicking themselves up the arse a bit.
Yeah.
And essentially, I think it worked. They looked like a lot more passion and a lot more, you know, wanting to do well in this Sweden match. And if anything, it was, it looked like the fact that they embraced the fact that they had got a second chance.
Yeah.
They knew that literally, come on, we've been given a blessing here, essentially. You can't let this slip. And, you know, now they're history makers, essentially, getting out of the group, okay, not of their own accord. So less of an achievement, really, in the grand scheme of things, despite the fact that Shevchenko said it was like the main objective of the tournament. I think reaching the quarterfinals has sort of met expectations, in my book anyway, because I think that was sort of the minimum for them. And here we are on the verge of potentially a first ever semi-final in Ukraine's history against Gareth Southgate's England, who haven't conceded a goal. So it's going to be tough.
Yeah, what was the reaction to the win against Sweden, especially the way it came with a goal in the very like last minute of extra time? It must have been insane.
I mean, in the stadium, it was just complete like elation, relief. Like people were crying in the stands. It was like that sort of emotionally charged. And, you know, I think the players were just ecstatic that it's sort of, they've redeemed themselves in front of the eyes of the fans, because I think they feel that they knew that there was a lot of pressure on them after that poor Austria performance that they had to make up for it, because, you know, Ukraine's had a lot of troubled times recently with the war and other problems. And like the national team is essentially giving them a bit of respite from all of that. And, you know, it was good that they were able to achieve that. Like Andriy Shevchenko's sons were in the crowd and they came down after and were celebrating with their dad despite COVID measures. And, you know, amongst other things, like everyone was ecstatic. Players were dancing in the changing rooms afterwards. Maybe not the fact that they've like won the tournament or anything, but I think it was more just like basically general happiness that now the sort of the pressure is slightly off them and now they can hopefully just go and enjoy themselves against England.
And looking forward now to the England game, like what is the story with the kind of walking wounded? You know, there was so many bodies going down against Sweden. Yeah. I think Yarmolenko has been ruled out already, and maybe there's some others as well.
Yarmolenko, I think, is 50-50.
Okay.
I think he might be fit. He hobbled off in extra time. And obviously, we know his injury issues recently. So not 100% sure whether he'll make it. Artem Beseddin, the substitute that came on in added time, obviously, with that horror tackle.
Yeah.
He's out for 6 months. So he won't be taking part again during this tournament. But it allows Artem Dovbyk, the match winner, to hopefully maybe get a few more minutes and maybe have another impact.
Is he like to start now if goes out in there?
I wouldn't say so. I think Tsahankov, who's another right wing in the team, if Yarmolenko's out, Tsahankov is more than capable of stepping up. He's like Dynamo Kiev's talisman at the moment, sort of his replacement when Yarmolenko left. So in general, it's there are those couple injuries issues that I've just mentioned, but it will just be a bit more about fitness management. Can Ukraine's fitness team deal with you know, the short change of dates in between? But you know, this is tournament football. If you can't cope with it, then you know, you don't really deserve to be there. So we'll see how Ukraine cope. It will be very interesting, and I'm not 100% sure how they'll do.
Is there likely to be like the same support in Rome that they had in Hamden, like in numbers?
No, it's expected to be a lot more. There's a massive Italian diaspora of Ukrainians over there. A lot of people working there and that sort of stuff. Apparently up to 200,000. So I don't know how many of those are going to be making it to the stadium in Rome. Mm-hmm. But I think there would certainly be more of a home atmosphere for Ukraine than there will be for England.
Oh, okay, because it's quite difficult for English people to travel over.
Exactly.
Yeah. Are you missing this one, or are you going to be watching at home?
I've got accreditation. I've got a flight. We will see whether I will be allowed into the stadium.
Okay, by hook or by crook. All right. So, I mean, everything in the British media or everything else seems to be more or less saying that England are already in the semi-final. Hypothetically, if you're drawing up, if you're Shevchenko, what is the plan for them to create some sort of upset?
I think he's going to go for a very similar lineup to what started against Sweden. Very defensive, five at the back, two holding midfielders, and then just letting a few players play out in attack, you know, either on the counter or trying to create something down the wings. You know, England centre-backs haven't been that solid, I would say. You know, Maguire's not been that fit recently. Tyrone Mings is a bit of a liability, you know, at the best of times. So, you know, it's there to exploit. And Yaremchuk, especially up top, quite a dynamic forward in being able to link up with his teammates, you know, with like cheeky little flicks and layoffs and stuff like that. So hopefully he can cause a few problems. And then I think the main issue will be the opening stages of the Sweden game. Ukraine just looked a bit nervous for whatever reason. Hopefully they've got over those nerves with that win and can maybe carry just a bit of a momentum going into this one. Because of how sort of emphatic that win was, maybe they can show something. And as I already said, there's no real pressure on Ukraine to go into this one. They're free to play as they like. And, you know, they favour the underdog story. They've played a number of top sides over the past couple of years and have got some good results against them. Beat Spain, drew with France in a World Cup qualifier, beat Portugal on the way to qualifying. So, you know, anything can happen, really.
What is their record? Have they played England recently in the last couple of years? Like, what is their...
Not in the recent... The most recent result was in 2013. And I think it was a 0-0 draw in Kyiv.
Okay.
And then before that was a 1-1 draw at Wembley when Conor Planka scored a sort of a memorable curler.
Yeah.
Ukraine have only beaten England once, I think, in 7 attempts, if I'm not mistaken. And that was in Dnipro in 2009 when Rob Green got sent off.
Yeah.
And then there was a bit of a wonder goal that decided it. But yeah, ironically, the first ever match I've ever seen as a football live for me was England versus Ukraine at Wembley Stadium in 2000. And someone shared a photo of the match day programme again, which I have, but it's of on that match day programme back in 2000 was Andriy Shevchenko, and Gareth Southgate on the front cover.
So, I mean, what are the chances?
So yeah, it's back again now as managers. Going to be interesting for sure.
On Shevchenko, what has he said about England so far? Has he given some hints on what the approach is going to be from Ukraine, or maybe like how they're kind of looking at it?
So Shevchenko is typically very coy whenever he responds to any questions on tactics, on personnel, anything. It's like literally, you're not going to get anything out of him until the match day. However, he has, you know, commended England for playing very well this tournament. They're very well organized, solid. He knows that they've got a lot of world-class players. Zinchenko, who was with him the other day in the press conference as well, also commended the fact that England's bench is probably costs more than Ukraine's entire squad.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the sort of things we're working with, but hopefully, you know, Zinchenko can maybe give a few tips on how to stop Sterling, and, you know, who knows? Honestly, I think now we're in knockout stage football, like we saw in the Switzerland-France game, literally anything.
Yeah. I mean, somebody could get sent off in the first 5 minutes for England, and then the whole thing,
the whole narrative
changes. But how strong is your hope? Are you kind of just viewing it as a free hit for Ukraine or an experience, or is there something in your mind, okay, there, I can see them exploiting something in England?
I'm not 100% sure how Ukraine will get the win, maybe tactically. I just think the thing that they could possibly exploit is the potentially hostile atmosphere.
Yeah.
That will probably be almost overwhelmingly on their side.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think the Italians that will be in the stadium as well
will be
backing Shevchenko, obviously, due to his history in the country. And also the fact that they probably don't want their Italian side playing England at Wembley in a final, which might be a bit of an unfair advantage for themselves. So, you know, I think it's all going to come down to the atmosphere and who can withstand the pressure. I think that's really where it's going to be won and lost.
Mm-hmm. Because also England haven't played away from home yet. You know, they played all their games at Wembley. So, I mean, in my mind, I think maybe if Ukraine are able to keep, the longer that Ukraine are able to keep it tight, the more I feel like the potential for England to get nervous is. But yeah, no, fingers crossed on my side. I hope there's something magical happens.
Absolutely.
Away from the football, I was just wondering, finally, what has been, do you have a particular highlight that you've enjoyed of maybe like a moment or like a meeting of following the Ukraine team during this tournament, aside from just exclusively from the games?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been, as a journalist, I've been in a number of press conferences that Ukraine have done, which they've been surprisingly open. Like, you know, England have done these like daily ones where
they do
the darts, but they also, like, we've had the snippets from like Jack Grealish talking about encyclopedias and stuff like that. maybe a bit less viral, but I had the opportunity to ask Andriy Ermolenko a nice little question about what he'd do if Ukraine won the Euros, in the same vein as Phil Foden's agreed that if England win the Euros, everyone in the team will be getting their hair dyed blonde.
Okay.
And Yarmolenko said, sadly, I won't be able to do anything similar because I'm slightly older and I don't want to risk anything with my hair at this stage, because he's receding a bit. And then he was like, and I don't really want to end up like our press secretary, who's bald. So it was quite a little funny moment. And of course, I'll just add to that his Heineken Coca-Cola
video. I saw that.
Very lighthearted, just gets the atmosphere going.
Yeah. All right, man. I hope you enjoy it as much as possible. And I really
thank you very much.
I really hope that Ukraine at least can sort of do a good justification.
Yeah, absolutely. Just go out without any regrets, hopefully.
All right. Talk to you in the semifinals.
Cheers.
All right, man. Have a good evening.
A nice one. Cheers.
Bye-bye. Yeah.
Social Podcast Network.